During the long gray days of winter, some gardeners keep their spirits up by looking through their seed catalogs, while others take comfort in the beauty of indoor plants. This hour, we'll focus on indoor flowering plants. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, will be here along with Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension. We'll talk about beating the winter blues with indoor flowering plants, including cyclamen, orchids, and other beautiful bloomers. Cindy and Richard will also answer your questions about the plants, indoor and outdoor, in your life. 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and on this gray and dreary January day, we're going to talk about beating the winter blues with flowering indoor plants. Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, is here. Hello, Cindy.
Hello.
And Richard Duran, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension, is here. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here today. And it is awfully gray. And, oh, dear, we've got a feedback problem. Hopefully that's been fixed. All right.
I hope so, too. Everybody's awake.
Right. Our ears are going to be okay. All right. So it is really, really drab out there, Cindy, and a great time to think about bringing some color into your home. And of course, a lot of us have holiday cactuses. A lot of us have just taken down lights and decorations. What are some of your suggestions for bringing some more color into the home?
Bringing more color usually means plants this time of year, and there's some really wonderful flowering plants outside, or flowering plants available at garden centers and grocery stores that can bring a lot of color. We mentioned before that things like cyclamen, gloxinia, cineraria, pocketbook plant, orchids, and primula are great things and easy things to find that bring a wide range of colors, and a lot of blues and reds and pinks and whites.
So if you go to a garden center this time of year, are they in particular pushing these kind of plants? Is this something that you'll see a lot of?
You will see a lot of these at garden centers and grocery stores and, you know, the supermarkets and the Walmarts as well.
Mm-hmm. When you go there and your eye is attracted to these plants, mm-hmm. what questions should you ask yourself before you buy them?
Well, I used to break them up into a couple of different categories. There's some that are we treat as annuals. So if we treat them as annuals, then you're going to bring them in, you're going to put them on your table for, you know, a month or 2 months while they're in bloom, and then usually they go to the compost pile when they're done. Things like the pocketbook plant, the primula, and the cineraria are three that I would say we kind of treat like annuals. Beautiful colors, they make a great kind of centerpiece, they, you know, brighten up a room. You just kind of keep them in bright, indirect light, keep them moist but well-drained. You really don't even have to fertilize them, and you enjoy them. And then when they're done, you just pitch them.
So, all right. So similar to how most people treat an amaryllis or
a poinsettia.
Right. Mm-hmm. What do these plants look like? I'm not familiar with all of them.
Okay. Well, cineraria, you've probably seen. It's a little blue daisy-like flower. So it's blue, lavender, pink, or white. Sometimes it has even a darker kind of blackish center, sometimes, or a whitish center. It's a really brilliant kind of brilliant colors, really bright blues and lavender colors. So, and it's a nice small, you know, it only gets maybe a 6, 8, 12 inches max tall, and it's usually completely covered in these kind of bright flowers.
And since you're treating it like an annual, mm-hmm. does that mean that it doesn't really need a special kind of location?
No, it doesn't necessarily. Bright and direct light and a cool temperature will keep them blooming and thriving a little bit longer. Cinerarias, all the plants that we're talking about today really like those temperatures around 60 degrees. So that 55, 60 degree night temperature that your home may have in certain spots is absolutely perfect. We also like to give them a little bit of light, so I don't want you to put them in a dark corner because a little bit of photosynthesis is required. They do have leaves, and they'll last a little bit longer. But they don't need to be in a window getting direct light to do well.
All right. And let's talk about a couple of the others. What do they look like?
Well, the other three that are possible to have really nicely in the home and do well longer term are things like cyclamen, gloxinia, and orchids. So cyclamen have these kind of reflexed petals back, and they're usually in pink or purple, red or white. Gloxinia has this huge bell-shaped flower that's kind of velvety looking, and it's usually a burgundy red or purple or white. And then orchids, you know, moth orchid is the one that you can find really relatively easy this time of year, and it kind of looks like it's purple or white, and it kind of looks like a moth in a sense.
Now, we've spent whole segments of the show talking about taking care of orchids. So let's start with the cyclamen.
Right.
Do you need to do anything special? Are they easy plants, or are they a little challenging too?
Cyclamen's pretty easier in this list. So they like cooler temperatures. So winter's usually really good for them. That 50 to 60 degree temperature, especially at night, is great. Because we want to keep them a little bit longer term, we're going to put them a little bit closer to a window so that gives them that bright indirect light again. And even though they like cooler temperatures, they don't like cold water. And that's another tip I would say with all of these plants is they really don't like cold water. So room temperature water when you're watering is and trying not to get the foliage wet is usually best.
All right. And what's the bloom cycle like with a cyclamen?
Well, with cyclamen and gloxinia, they bloom a lot in the winter, and they usually bloom anywhere from 6, 8, maybe even up to 10 weeks indoors if it stays nice and cool. Both of these plants have a dormant period. Cyclamen has a corm, gloxinia is a tuber, so it goes dormant usually late in the spring. The flowers have disappeared, the foliage starts to disappear. And if you let it dry out and just let it rest in a cool, dark location for a couple of months, it usually comes back. So
they sort of go to sleep when everything else wakes up.
Exactly, because they really don't like the heat. The trick is keeping them in that kind of cool, dark location that's kind of dry, and then knowing when to water them again and bring them back. And this is when, you know, 50% of them don't make it
right.
Because we don't do it right. And
or we don't remember where we put them. Or
right. And dormant actually equals dead. So because we don't bring them out of it or they don't go into it well. So but it's possible to bring them back. And then if you bring them back, they actually look sometimes and do well. They can look even better than they did before.
Wow. And how many years can you continue that cycle?
I've had some friends who've done it for 4 or 5 years. So, and then, you know, usually we forget where we put them
right.
Or something happens, but they're beautiful plants and worth trying. So even if you just get it 1 or 2 years after you try, that's pretty awesome.
And do they tend to get a lot bigger? Do you need to repot every year?
Ideally, you should. You should repot, put them in some new soil, and you would do that when you're bringing them out of dormancy. That's the best time.
All right. And that cool, dry place. Light is not a factor when they're
no.
dormant.
When they're dormant, they're, you know, dark is fine. So greenhouse growers, if they have some that they're, you know, going to keep over, which they don't always do, they'll put them under a bench or in a, you know, an area that's a little bit cooler, that's shaded, that's not getting any direct light.
Right. So a basement shelf or something like that would be the perfect spot.
Or a garage that's, you know, stays cooler too. That'd be great.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about orchids, because, of course, you do see them everywhere when you go to the flower store, when you go to the landscaping store this time of year. And they're so beautiful and so tempting. What do you need to think about when you buy orchids?
When I buy an orchid and when I buy any kind of flowering plant, I look for something that's just starting to open. And this is really important with orchids because I might want to have one bloom open and then the rest are just kind of in buds. And I want to look for one or two stalks that's kind of full of buds. I also look for a moth orchid in particular, a really nice dark green healthy leaves. So once you find that, and it could be a big one, it could be a little one, you know, taking it home, putting it into a place where it's got some bright indirect light again, and maybe even a little bit of direct light, and then giving it good, consistent care.
And orchids are one of those plants that we see some really unusual colors when we go to the flower store, and not all of those colors are natural. So how do you know?
This is true. So that blue color that you see on an orchid, you can get in a cineraria that's natural, but in an orchid, it has been dyed or it's been injected with a dye to kind of give you that color. How do you know?
If it's too good to be true. Or
well, if it looks a little bit odd or a little bit unusual, it probably has been dyed in some way. It usually means it was a white orchid that has been dyed to kind of create this unusual color. So the blues, the really distinctive blue colors, are definitely not natural for orchids.
And does that dyeing process indicate any kind of health in the future? I know it's something that people enjoy briefly, but
right.
You can enjoy white blooms later, too?
Oh, absolutely. I have one in my office that I bought as a blue orchid, and then it's bloomed two or three times since.
Now, it's
white now, of course.
A lot of people with really beautiful houseplant gardens, I guess I'd call them, have special lighting in their home that they've set up for those plants. Is there a kind of a simple setup that you could recommend that really expands your options?
You can set up, you know, a lot of us in our kitchens have some under cabinet lighting that might be fluorescent, you know, lights. Or we might have, you know, if we're going to do a lot of vegetable seedlings, we have these trays of, you know, growing lights that we have for different things. For most of these houseplants, they don't need a great deal of light. And if you can give them some of that bright indirect light from maybe an eastern or even a western window, they'll do really well. So you don't necessarily have to set up that supplemental lighting.
And of course, a lot of people hang their plants. A lot of people have different plant stands. Do you find that it matters? Is there any kind of setup that seems to be more effective?
I do have plant stands in my home, but that's only because then I could kind of put them at or near the window level. So it's really up to you as to, you know, making sure that you know, light is available and getting them, you know, near that window at that at the proper level. That would be great. And then the grow plant stands are fantastic, but I would say you would want those for more than just a few houseplants. You might want those for, you know, the vegetable seedlings as well.
And over the years, have you seen a lot of cycles in popularity among these indoor flowering plants? I mean, African violets are still lovely, but I don't think they're quite at the peak of popularity yet. As they were for a while.
Right. The pocketbook plant or calcellaria is one of them that was really popular in like the 70s. And now it seems to be, you know, a little bit less popular, but it's kind of fun when you find it. So everything kind of goes in cycles.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions. Cindy Haynes is here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we would love to hear from you with your questions about the plants in your life. Maybe you're planning for spring and you have some questions. Let us know. Maybe you've got trees you're concerned about, you can call us, or maybe those houseplants. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension. And during the break, Cindy, I looked up the pocketbook plant because I wanted to see what that looked like. That is adorable.
It is really cute, and it's got this perfect little pouch of a flower. So it would be fun to put little snacks in it, I think.
Well, maybe I will even brave it and think maybe my cats will let it live. But it's awfully cute, and it comes in so many different colors.
Yes, really bright red and gold colors, and then orange and kind of rusty browns, and sometimes they're spotted. It's really fun when you can find it because it's very unusual, and it's pretty easy to have. And once again, treat it like an annual. So enjoy it while it's there and then compost it when it's done.
And don't beat yourself up about that.
Nope.
All right. Beat yourself up. Let's get to the calls. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Josh is on the line in Iowa City. Hi,
hi Josh.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Yeah, I have a question about a Christmas cactus. I'm not sure if that's exactly what it's called. That's what we've always called it. We inherited it from my grandfather after he passed away, and we want to keep it going. It bloomed this year, mm-hmm. But we'd also like to split it up, and I guess I'm just not quite sure where to begin on how to split it up and how to care for it moving forward.
Well, I wouldn't split it up, but you can propagate it. And what you do is you kind of cut off or pinch off one of those leaf-like segments and make maybe a 3, 4, 5 segment section. Cut it off or pinch it off. And try to cut it off or pinch it off at the edge of one of those sections where they meet. And then try to root those. I would try perlite. And put that in perlite. And put that in a pot, water it, and then I would take like a knife and make a hole in the perlite and then stick that segment down into the actual perlite about an inch or two deep and just keep it moist. And those sections should root in typically 4 or 5, 6 weeks. And then when they have a nice root system, just take them out and pot them up into a good, well-drained potting soil. And they really need a well-drained potting soil. So what I would typically do is buy a typical commercial potting soil and maybe add some additional perlite to it to improve the drainage and use that. And once you pot those up, they're typically good for several years. So they don't need to be repotted very often at all.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Josh. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Yep. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mark is up next in Ames. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Hello, Charity.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, Cindy and Richard, I would like to know what each one of you likes the best for houseplants. What do you find is most tolerant when we have to be in houses that are heated with forced air heat and all that stuff? What's your top plant?
Okay, I'll go first. Mm-hmm. I guess pothos.
What are those?
Which is a vining plant, very similar to philodendron.
It's called devil's ivy sometimes.
Yes, is another name. It's green with a little bit of yellow in the leaf. And
yeah, I know that one.
And I have it in a pot, and it's kind of crawling around the room. So it requires very little care. The only thing I basically do is water it about every 2 weeks and fertilize a little bit in the spring and summer. Other than that, it just does its thing. And I just kind of lead the vine wherever it wants to go.
And, Richard, I now realize that I've seen those before and maybe thought that they were variegated philodendron. They look really similar.
Right. Almost identical as far as appearance, but a little bit different.
All right. How about you, Cindy? I'm sure that's a tough one for you.
It is, because I kind of have different things at different times. I have a rosemary right now, so I have some herbs that sometimes I grow indoors as houseplants. We'll see how long I can keep that alive, because I usually don't do so well with rosemary for some reason. I always have a sansevieria or cactus, a couple of succulents or cactus. Sansevieria is also called mother-in-law's tongue or snake plant. Mm-hmm. It's also incredibly durable plant. I usually have a couple of orchids or some flowering house plants, so African violets and orchids, because I like to have a few blooms. And I've had a few begonias this year too. So, but it varies. Yeah, it varies. Whatever I find that I like, I'll try for a little while and see how it does.
And my problem is finding things that are tolerant in the house, like I said before, with the gas heat.
Things like that.
That was interesting to hear.
Yeah, that devil's ivy and the snake plant, I don't think you can kill them. So they're pretty tough. So give them a try, maybe an airplane plant or spider plant. Those three things do really well, mostly indoors.
All right.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot for your call.
Do you have one?
Well, I do. I can tell you about mine. I have a number of house cats. So I used to have house plants, and then I just gave up the fight because it was messy and annoying.
Right.
But I do have one philodendron, and of course, you basically can't kill them, which is great. And it's up high enough that the cats can't kill them. And of course, philodendron can be poisonous to cats, so it's important to keep them separate. but also, it belonged to my grandmother.
Mm.
And she died back in 1997. So, and she'd had it for many, many years. So it's kind of a fun connection. And pretty much everybody in my family has a plant that's grown from a cutting from one of her philodendrons. So that's fun.
That's cool.
Yes, and unkillable, which is fantastic.
It is good
for me. All right, if you have a question, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next, let's go to Rita in Kelowna, Illinois. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Charity. Two things. You should be able to do this at home with your cats. Do you have the cat bubblers for waterers?
No, we don't. We don't.
I had a very healthy Mexican heather that I didn't want to lose, mm-hmm. and I set it next to the cat bubbler, and it has been blooming ever since, and I moved the orchids there, and they just love them.
Oh. Interesting. So the humidity.
Yeah.
Nice.
It took the cats about 3 days to get used to the bubblers, but now they out of the sinks and toilets.
And your other question is animal related as well. I'm not sure we're going to be able to help you, but it's an unusual problem. Tell us about it.
I used to be a forest, so I have a forest in the house that I bring in and out, and I brought tree frogs in this year.
Oh, nice.
And they're still alive, but I want them to live, and I haven't been doing anything in the way of bringing food for them. I have no idea what that would be. One is the one that is like a chameleon, and it changes mm-hmm. colors to where it is. And the other one is the southern tree frog. The one's upstairs, the one's downstairs. And has anybody had any experience with trying to keep them alive?
No, how fun, though. My 8-year-old would love your house chasing those frogs. I have no idea on what to do to keep them alive.
I have no idea either. I would just say just keep them indoors as best you can on the plants.
Yeah, right now the one downstairs, the little green one, is on the big hibiscus, mm-hmm. and the cats don't bother it, but they sit and watch it.
they're developing a plan, I bet.
Hours and hours of entertainment, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, if you can spend a little time on the computer, I think you can probably, some people keep them as pets. Maybe you can overwinter them as pets and then release them back outside in the spring. Or if you have, I'm sure you have a land-grant university in Illinois you can call. Maybe they've got a wildlife specialist that can help you out with that. Rita, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Ryan in Van Meter. He says, I picked up several dwarf Alberta spruces and an arborvitae after Christmas pretty cheap. I repotted them and am wintering them over in an insulated attached garage near a window. Is there anything else I should do?
No.
I would check them periodically, right, and see if they need to be watered. And if they're getting dry, I would go ahead and water them. And that's basically it until basically spring.
Well, that's a great idea. You can get a lot of them very inexpensively if you've got the space to overwinter them.
All right. And here's a question from Julie. I work in an office with no windows. I have a fluorescent light under a shelf on my mm-hmm. desk. Are there any plants or flowers that will thrive in this environment?
Actually, try some African violets. That would be one that really likes that fluorescent light. You can have it on for about 14 hours. That's the key, is to have it on for about 14 hours in pretty close to the light.
I wonder if they can set a timer on office lights.
Yeah, and that's...
Because you couldn't just leave it on 24 hours a day. That would be bad, right?
Okay. No, that's the problem. So
I hope she's not working 14-hour days.
I hope so, too. So see if she can set one up on timer. African violets will do actually pretty well. The other possibility is to go with those really durable ones like the philodendron and the pothos.
All right. So... There are plants.
There are plants.
Are unkillable in that environment as well. All right, let's go back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got a few lines open for you right now. And Randy is on the line from Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. I seen a moth flying down the road when I was going from one place to the other at 6 o'clock this morning. But the question is, what are your thoughts on the black gold and white gold cherries, and have you had much experience with plums called green gage?
As far as the sweet cherries, the white gold, yeah. The black gold, they come from Cornell University. They were introduced by that university. They have very good cold hardiness, and they would be a good choice for Iowa, especially the southern half of Iowa.
And these are sweet cherries, you said?
They are. Okay. They are sweet cherries. Most sweet cherries, when you think of sweet cherry, you think of Bing. That's kind of a very common variety. That is not reliably hardy in Iowa. And most sweet cherry cultivars are not hardy in Iowa. So white gold, black gold would be good choices for southern Iowa, southern half. Green gage should be fine, too.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice plum.
All right.
Thank you.
Something to add along with the pears, huh, Randy?
Right.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question from Virginia in Mount Vernon. I've always wanted to have an elephant jade tree. I currently have a cutting. What's the best soil mix, watering schedule, and light for the jade? And am I correct in thinking that the elephant jade is the best variety for tree form?
I love jade plants and jade trees, so they're absolutely fantastic. And there are a lot of varieties out there. I haven't heard of the one called elephant, but most jades do require full sun indoors if they can get it. So it's really bright, some direct light. So think about a western window, maybe even a southern window. And most jades don't like a lot of moisture. So keep them a little bit on the dry side because they are a true succulent. And if they get too wet, they get very limp and then they will rot and die pretty quickly. Jades are incredibly long-lived houseplants. So this is one that, like that philodendron that you got from your grandmother, this is one you can pass down pieces from, you know, for generations and keep alive, actually, for a really long time. And it's pretty slow growing. It's another really good houseplant.
All right. And she mentioned having a cutting right now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to do to get a cutting to sprout?
Well, in a cutting or any kind of succulent, put it in kind of a really sandy soil or that perlite again, 100% perlite. Wait usually a couple of months. Keep it moist, but it's, you know, it's something that's really well drained. And then it will root and then send up a kind of a new shoot as well. And that's when you know you're good to go and you can put it in more of a sandy soil mix. Usually jade, it's about 50% sand because we want that weight and that good drainage.
All right. And you said they don't like to be wet. So how often would you water?
Depends on the light environment. But if it's getting a lot of light, so some direct light, you're probably watering maybe once a week. And you'll water more, of course, in like summer when it's really, you know, intense sun and less in the winter. Check the first 2 inches of the soil and just kind of feel, because you really want, you know, the first half of that soil to dry out before you water.
You mentioned watering schedules a couple of times. With houseplants, is that really the main problem that a lot of us have, is giving our houseplants too much water?
Too much or too little. So some of us do drought tolerance studies in our houses all the time, and then some of us try flooding.
Again,
stress.
Philodendrons work really well with the drought tolerance study.
Yes, I know. So I think that's the thing, as I tell master gardeners, is to make sure you check first before you water. So don't put everything on a schedule and say, I need to water every Saturday or every Sunday. check on every Saturday or Sunday, but know that, you know, maybe you can skip a week in the winter and maybe you need to water more in the summer. So check frequently.
All right. And when you check, you're just checking to make sure that it's dry to a certain point, or what are you checking for?
Yeah, just kind of feeling the top to see if it's still moist. If it's still moist, you can wait a little while longer. And if it's dry to the touch at the top, then it's now's a good time to water. And water thoroughly until water comes out, you know, the bottom of the pot. So, you know, the whole soil profile, all the roots have gotten some water.
Now, of course, a lot of people make these mistakes. And mm-hmm. so a lot of companies have come up with tools that you can use to help you not make those mistakes. And some of them are a little gimmicky. Some of them might work. Are there any of those kinds of tools that, you know, maybe to have consistent water in a plant or to give you an indicator that it's dry? Any of those tools that you guys like?
My favorite tool is your finger. And just
and your eyes.
And your eyes. And lifting the pot sometimes. Those are usually the best. Soil moisture meters will work, but it kind of depends on the type of soil. So they're going to have a different reading in a really sandy soil versus, you know, a peat type soil. So, and they may not move as much as you would think. So really, I think the best thing is just, you know, using a little bit of common sense and checking.
All right. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. And, of course, we're taking your calls and your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got Matt on the line from Floyd. Hi, Matt. Hey,
hello.
Matt. Hi. What's your question?
Well, Cindy was talking about herbs as houseplants, and I had recently dug up a French tarragon for my high tunnel. And I was going to divide it by roots into different containers because the root system is pretty spread out. And I was wondering what would be the best soil mix to repot that into. And also, if it would be the same thing to repot a rosemary into, or a different one, if you could address that. Thank you.
That'd be great. And yes, I would use just a typical potting mix, a general potting soil, a houseplant potting soil, or, you know, a container potting soil like Miracle-Gro usually has good drainage, and drainage is really necessary for herbs like rosemary and the tarragon. And they work well in containers. So don't use any garden soil if you even have access to garden soil at this time of year. And then growing them indoors after you've potted them up, water them well and give them as much light as possible. The rosemary, the tarragon, a lot of the herbs, the more light we can give them, the better they will grow, and usually the better they will taste if you're going to use them indoors. So warm temperatures, plenty of light, and a good, well-drained potting mix.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, and Jan is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Jan.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too.
I have what I call a lily pad begonia. Big, flat leaves on long stems coming out of a central stem that curls around.
Cool.
And it's in a 5-inch pot. I started it from a slip from a friend several years ago, and now it has really taken off, and it's crawled around the pot, and it's got a second new plant coming from the base of the main stem. And I'm thinking I would like, I don't know when I need to transplant it. That's one question. If I do need to transplant it, it's got such a weird habit, and I'm afraid of breaking the stem. I'd like some advice.
Yeah. There are some really unusual begonias out there. It sounds like this one's doing really well. So I wouldn't want you to do anything with it right now because it's doing pretty well. In March, I probably would want you to transplant it into a slightly larger container. And in doing that, be really careful because some of those stems are a little bit brittle and they will break. That's also a good time to think about propagating it. And it would be fun to try and propagate this one because it's doing well for you. And usually a leaf petiole cutting will work. And you can even take stem cuttings as well if you want to kind of trim it back just a little bit. But I would say a leaf petiole cutting and then repot sometime in March. And okay. You will have more of a good thing.
Right. And if it snaps off when I'm transplanting it, that root...
Yes, it could. That could be a perfect cutting. So put that in some potting soil or start it off in some perlite so that you can get it rooting first and then transfer it to potting soil. So it would make a nice cutting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got some tree frog expertise on the line. Sherry is on the line in Ely. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, I don't call myself an expert, but anyway, one January, I found that I had a tree frog living in one of the bromeliads that I had outside on my porch.
Oh, fun.
It was very happy living inside, just like you would see in the rainforest. So since I didn't know what to feed it, I took the bromeliad along with the tree frog in it to the nearest nature center and gave it to them to take care of for the rest of the winter. So I don't know about feeding, but I know that it was very happy in a large bromeliad because of the water and the moisture. So that's what I wanted to pass on.
All right. Cool. Thanks a lot, Sherry. What a lovely happy ending for that one.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Yep. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Ken is on the line in Rhinebeck. Hi, Ken.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, in my windrow, some of our fine feathered friends have deposited some seeds, mulberries to be exact, and wanting to know what time of the year or can I do it now, cut those out and use a concentrated Roundup or Tordon without hurting my arborvitaes.
Right. What I would probably do is wait till maybe, let's say mid to late May, when the mulberries have leafed out, and then I would go out, cut them off near the ground, and then immediately paint Roundup on the cut surface. And I would use the Roundup as is, the concentrate, and just apply it with like a foam-type paintbrush, and that should kill them.
Okay. Don't use a sprayer?
I would use like a paintbrush just to control where I put my Roundup. With a spray, sometimes, if you're not careful, it might get on something else. With a paintbrush, you apply it just to the cut surface, and that will go down into the root system, kill the root system, kill the mulberry, but it will not affect the other plants, the arborvitae at all.
I do have some that are actually growing up through the arborvitae, and this is about a 5. I planted it 5 to 7 years ago, so they're not fully grown or anything, and these mulberry trees are growing up. A couple of them are growing up through it, so
yeah.
I'm worried about it being buds.
Yeah, they grow very quickly. The birds deposit the seed, and they grow very quickly. And if you don't do anything, they will begin to crowd out the arborvitae, so they have to be destroyed.
Now, should I cut them? When I cut them, should I leave enough room that if I have to recut them again to do a reapply, or you think one application should do it?
One application should do it. Should be fine.
Wait till May.
Yep, I would, because Roundup is most effective as far as the plant absorbing it when the plant is actively growing. And right now they're in the dormant state. But by May, when they're leafing out, they're starting to actively grow, they should absorb it very readily, and that should be the end of them.
Okay, there isn't any chance that I could cut them down now and then make a fresh cut come May? Would that work?
You could, but if you did, I would leave plenty of plant left.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and it sounds like, Richard, you're saying he can save himself some work if he just waits.
Yeah, I think you would, yeah, over the long term. Okay. Instead of doing it twice, just do it once.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Ken. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sarah is on the line next. Hi, Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hello. Well, okay, so I bought some indoor bamboo.
Oh, cool.
It is pretty cool. At my local grocery store, and I have two of them, and I think that they need transplanted because they're getting pretty big, but I don't know a thing about bamboo, and I don't know if it requires special care, a special pot, special dirt. I really just don't. No,
typical potting soil is fine. Is this the bamboo in potting soil or in a container, or is it bamboo that's in the water? Because sometimes there's just bamboo.
I'm guessing that there's probably soil beneath the rocks. I think there's like a top layer of rocks, and okay. I'm hoping that there's some sort of soil.
Yeah, there would be. You would. The water ones are definitely in what looks like vases, so you can see the water.
Okay.
So generally it's just a typical potting soil. Bamboos like to be a little bit on the moist side. So when you repot them, maybe a slightly larger container, good typical potting soil. I would wait a little bit for repotting. I would wait until, once again, say February or March. So that would be another thing as well. And then Richard just wrote a little message that he says dracaenas are, something else that are often called bamboo.
Lucky bamboo.
Yeah, that's the lucky bamboo.
That's what it says on the thing is lucky bamboo.
Yeah,
so it's not
a true bamboo.
But
which is good because it's a better houseplant. Dracaena is a better houseplant. And it still kind of gives you that lucky or that bamboo type of a look. So,
okay.
Good light. It should do well. It's a great houseplant. Go ahead.
They seem to be flourishing pretty well. I've also noticed that the container that they're in isn't drained. It's just like an enclosed glass container. Should I continue with that, or should it be like in a pot with holes in it so it's well drained?
The trick is it kind of depends on how good you are at taking care of it. Lucky bamboo or dracaena can tolerate moist environments and will tolerate just sitting in standing water. It usually lives a little bit longer if things drain and, in a typical pot with drainage as well.
Okay.
So, I think I would say if it were mine, and I wanted to keep it around for a long time, I would put it in kind of a moist soil that does have some drainage so that I would have some control on how moist I could keep it, but then it would still drain occasionally so it's not staying too wet.
And how big do they get? So, I'm wondering what size up I should get, because this is a pretty small container that they're in now.
Right.
So I'm just kind of wondering how big I should expect it to get.
Yeah, the next container you should get should be one just a little bit larger than what you already have. So we kind of stair step it up. So just a little bit in as far as transplanting. And you might, repot it every year for a few years. And then it usually kind of, stays at a typical size. Some dracaenas can get very large. But it usually takes a long time for them to get there, and it will be a long time because you started with something pretty small.
Okay.
So it's not going to happen overnight. Yeah. No problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck, Sarah. Right, thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Here's a question from Marlene, and another difficult plant name to pronounce. I have two Calibrachoa.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
That I have
Good
had.
Job.
Thanks. Since summer, they were still blooming as colder weather approached, so I kept them in the garage at night during freezing temperatures and would set them out during the sunny days. They are still blooming. I water them occasionally. Is there any hope for them to live through the winter? I know the they'll probably freeze in the garage soon. Would it help to take them inside during this next cold snap, or are they doomed?
They're doomed if it gets below freezing.
Yeah, they are.
But if you bring them inside, they can still survive, yes. So,
and you can also take cuttings from these as well. So that's another way to kind of maybe propagate them so you have little ones for spring.
All right. And here's a question from Joan. Never before had we had fungus gnats, which look like fruit flies. What a surprise, caused by using some of my summer potting soil to bring plants inside. We now have yellow strips from the garden store to catch them after they feed in the plants and a granular to treat the soil from. Is there a better way to fix this problem? And do you have to repot plants before bringing them inside?
I would try the environmental approach where basically these things need a very wet or moist potting soil. So the first thing I would do, I would take a knife and just kind of lightly work up the upper inch or two of the potting soil so it dries out better, and then water less frequently. And so if you have a drier environment, then gradually the insect population should fall down. So that'd be my approach.
All right, and let's go back to the phones. Walt is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Walt.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have two Christmas cactuses. One of them I got from the discount grocery store a couple of years ago. The other is about 130 years old.
Awesome.
So the one that I got from the discount store blooms profusely and long.
Okay.
The foliage is both about 18 inches in diameter.
Okay.
The one that's ancient, we received it, we repotted it, and it gets some of those tiny buds on it, but it has never bloomed, not in 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Are they in the same area?
And they're kept. Yes, they're kept exactly the same. They go outside in the summertime. They come in. As soon as it starts to get cool in November, the one just explodes.
Okay.
And the other one doesn't.
Okay. Well, the other one apparently is a little bit more finicky. The key there is the environment beginning toward the end of August. And where the plant needs to be is in an area where it gets plenty of light, does not need direct sunlight.
Yeah.
But is also kind of on the cool side. I would say around 60 to 65.
Oh, and, it's not getting that.
Okay. Because if you have temperatures that are, let's say, above 70 during this period, let's say beginning late August, early September, if they have temperatures above 70 degrees, that may interfere with flower bud development on the plant. And so you want slightly cooler temperatures, definitely below 70. I prefer 60, 65. And again, you want to have them in a room where you don't have artificial light at night, because flowering is basically controlled by the length of the daylight and also the temperature. And so again, make sure it's cool and the plant receives just natural daylight during the day.
And once it starts to set some flower buds, the ones that are really finicky, Christmas cactus or holiday cactus don't like to dry out completely like other cacti or succulents. So this is the time that you want to keep it maybe a little more, and maybe this other one is a little finicky on moisture. So don't let it dry out as much, because the first thing they drop is the flower buds.
All right. Walt, thank you so much for your call. And Cindy Haynes, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension. We'll be back with Horticulture Day, not next Friday, but the one after that. We'll go back to weekly shows in March, but it's already feeling a little bit more like spring in here. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.